In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, December 23rd, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The last Federal News Countdown of the year, because the next Friday we'll be enjoying some rest and relaxation as we prepare for 2012. And so it's a pretty cool Federal News Countdown I have lined up today. Normally what I do is we have two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the most important federal news stories for the week. Today I have two experts in the world of the federal government who have chosen their top three most important federal news stories for the entire year of 2011. And I'm happy to say that they are two of my colleagues and two of my favorite colleagues. I want to introduce you first to Jolie Lee, who I talk about all the time on the show. And she is, what is your official title?
I'm a digital news writer.
Okay, I knew it wasn't really technically internet editor anymore.
No.
And you are, I would say, the most prolific tweeter on our staff. Your Twitter handle is...
What? I'm at J. Lee, WFED, and I also tweet from our main account, which is Fed News Radio.
Okay, so when one of the tweets comes on the main Twitter account, it could be you too.
Yes.
Okay, you have chosen your stories, and we're going to count those down, and they're linked up to at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And my other colleague on the countdown today is one of the producers of the In-Depth program, Justin Udo. It's great to have you on the program, too.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. We always have a good time, you and Emily and I, putting the show together, and I'm pleased to have you on. Emily was originally going to be in the seat in which Jolie is now sitting. But Emily bagged it and went to Ohio for Christmas. So here we are, the three of us, ready for the Federal News Countdown. And, of course, we start, as we always do, with...
Number three!
Third most important federal news story of the year, according to Jolie Lee, is coincidentally written by Jolie Lee. Nicely done there. Kudos to you on that one. The headline is, Moran's objections to BRAC move confirmed a new DOD IG report. And... I like this selection because it crystallizes not just the Mark Center problems, Jolie, but some of the growing pains and fits and starts that we've had all over the region with the whole BRAC initiative. What did you see in particular in this story?
Just some background on BRAC. So it's short for Base Realignment and Closure, and the commission was formed in 2005, and the deadline was September 15th of this year to consolidate and close some military bases. So I thought this particular element of the story really shows what some of the traffic implications for the region. I mean, Moran has been saying from the beginning that this project needs to be slowed down, looked at, reexamined.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of saying in the interview, my interpretation was like, I told you so to the Army.
Yeah, I took that away, too. One thing that I think we should point out, too, is this is not partisan by any means. Governor McDonnell, who was one of the staunchest Republicans in the Commonwealth of Virginia, has spoken out about this, too, that this Inspector General's report is just one of a string of indications that this is a big problem. And somebody needs to continue to look at this. There is a limit now in the Defense Authorization Act that the president still hasn't signed but is expected to shortly to limit the number of parking spaces there. So there are all kinds of controls. And
right.
Even though the Mark Center thing is not is essentially open for business, this conversation, this debate won't end and will carry over well into 2012, it looks
like. Right. And Moran said in this interview earlier this month, basically, I'm quoting him, the building is somehow going to be occupied. There's a lot of blame to go around, but the fact is it's there. So at this point, they're dealing with it in the way they can. And like you mentioned with the parking spots, originally the complex has about 3,800. So to try to control for that, the bill would limit the spots to 2,000. So
Almost in half.
Right.
More details of this, of course, the story's posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jolie Lee's story number 3. Most important federal news story of the year is Moran's objections to BRAC move confirmed in new DOD IG report. Justin Udo, your third most important federal news story of the year is our colleague Jason Miller's story. White House draft bill expands DHS cyber responsibilities. And it seems to me to be, this is from back in April, but this, what we've seen since then is that this is just another step to make DHS the go-to agency, it looks like, when it comes to cyber on the civilian side, at least.
Exactly, exactly. It seems like after 8 years, DHS has been around and kind of finally really finding their identity, finding who they are, what they're going to be leaning towards. And cyber seems like that's what it's going to be, not just for them, but if we look at the how the government is spending with its cyber budget, mm-hmm. it was about $8 billion last year. It looks like it's going to be even more for 2012. And that's just a microcosm, as a lot of these stories are, for it, what's happening at one agency that yields to be true mm-hmm. for a lot of other agencies.
Yeah, we see that. I think that is more common in this administration, and there's maybe more of a conscious effort in this administration than previous administrations to be willing to try to replicate and scale what's working at one agency at another agency. There are examples in every administration, but it looks to me like this administration is making more of a conscious effort than ever. Now, one of the top stories we have on our site now is the story about a little bit of turnover in the cyber office at the Homeland Security Department. Was interesting to me that Alan Paller pointed out on the program yesterday that our story about the departure of Nicole Dean from DHS although it was portrayed in Alan's mind as a negative that she was leaving there, his viewpoint was that's not a negative, that it indicates what your stories are pointing out here, and that is DHS is kind of finding its wings and getting ready to really take off as a cyber entity.
And if we look before that, there's been many times throughout the years where we've wrote or done a cyber story at DHS, and we see that they're putting different positions together. They're taking people from one position and creating a new position, mm-hmm. which encompasses more. And like I said, they're just really stressing the cybersecurity issue, and the whole structure of the agency is kind of shifting towards that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Justin Udo's number 3 most important federal news story of the year. White House draft bill expands DHS cyber responsibilities. It's from April by our colleague Jason Miller. You can read it and all of the stories on the Federal News Countdown this week on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal story of the entire year with Jolie Lee and Justin Udo when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio Receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio. More radio, more value.
You can help the Army Historical Foundation honor the soldiers of yesterday and today. Go to armyhistory.org to learn how you can help build the National Museum of the U.S. Army. The museum will be the Army's national landmark, preserving the sacrifice of every man and woman who has worn the Army uniform since 1775. Visit armyhistory.org today and honor the Army's service of every generation.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, John Dedon, my partner at Odin Feldman & Pittleman, and Wendy Payne, who is the owner and operator of a company called Life Stage Transitions. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
An American company creating American jobs with American pride? That's Hyundai.
You come in with a great attitude. You're happy to be at work.
I am happy to be here. I'm proud to be here.
This is the highest paying job I've ever had.
Good wages. Great wages.
The benefits are great.
I love the pay and benefits.
The benefits of working at Hyundai are awesome.
Hyundai is building more than cars. We're rebuilding pride in America.
This is not just a job. This is a career. We have a career here.
I feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of accomplishment. Something that we all can rejoice in because we've done this together.
They allow you to grow with the company. That is Hyundai. That's the difference.
I love the people. They're extraordinary.
Working with pride. Working at Hyundai.
Let me tell you, I've got a sense of pride.
I love my job.
Proud partner in the American dream. Dream with us at HyundaiAmerica.us.
Hyundai is an all-American success story.
Hyundai. New thinking. New possibilities.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown is the three most important federal news stories of 2011 as selected by two of my colleagues who don't get much airtime but should get more based on what I've heard so far. Jolie Lee from our digital... Tell me again what...
Digital news writer.
Digital news writer from our digital news department. And Justin Udo, one of the terrific producers on In Depth with Francis Rose. And we're up to... Now, the second most important federal news story of the year, as selected both by you, Justin, and you, Jolie, both have to do with the Postal Service. Jolie, you chose Jason's story from March, headlined, USPS Financial Rescue May Not Stop Death Spiral. And Justin, you chose a couple of these. Story from January by our colleague Meg Beasley, USPS Shrinks Workforce Changes Pension. And then Jared's story from May, Jared Serbu's story, headlined, USPS Warns of Default on Retiree Benefits. Now, one of the themes that I see through all of these stories is there is nothing good for the long-term health of the Postal Service in any of these stories. Jolie, why did the Postal Service and their situation make such an impact on you when you were looking at these?
Well, if you look at how much the USPS lost this fiscal year, which was $5.1 billion, you just saw a series of stories this year about how the Postal Service is grappling with these losses. And this has to do with the decrease in people using snail mail and also USPS having an obligation to prefund its retirement health benefits. So, some of the ways that USPS has been trying to handle these cuts: in August, they announced they were going to cut 220,000 positions by 2015, 100,000 through attrition. They've also identified 3,700 post offices for closure, which is about 12% of the offices nationwide. And they're also looking to cut half of its processing network, which is about 250 centers and about 35,000 jobs. So these are just huge cuts you're looking at. And, this is just in the past year. So it affects tons of people.
Yeah, the political undertone here is obvious, too. And you see the story that that you posted on our site a couple of days ago, Jolie, about the fact that the Postal Service closures, the branches they wanted to close, that's being delayed now till sometime next year because they just don't want to go there right now politically when they're trying to do some of these other things. Justin, this Postal Service issue is another one that we're going to see a lot of in 2012. What amongst all of this jumped out at you as you were looking at these?
There were a few things that really caught my eye and caught my ear. And once, like I said with my first story, it's really a microcosm of what the other agencies are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the retiree benefits that are looking, they want to mess with, just like there were talks to mess with different formulas for benefits of other agencies, workers at other agencies. And if we look at the workforce shrinking, and when we talk about across the board cuts, not just at USPS, but at other agencies, we really see that this is ringing true across the whole federal workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be in the same ways. There might be different things that can be done at USPS, but this is something that other folks at other agencies should pay attention to, should really keep on the top of their mind, and they probably are. So
the whole issue with the Postal Service as a microcosm of the overall broader picture, I think, is a very apt one, because the budget situation doesn't indicate it's going to get any better anytime soon at the Postal Service. They're making some efforts in some ways that I think make a lot of sense, going after a bigger package business. And doing some things. The one story that you pulled, Justin, says that Senator Carper is advocating legislation that would let the Postal Service ship alcoholic beverages. Little things like that might not seem like much, but there are tremendous chunks of business like that, mm-hmm. that they're giving away immediately to other carriers just off the top.
And just like USPS has to do some rethinking on different services they provide, I think other agencies are going to have to look at different services they provide.
Mm-hmm.
And we oftentimes talk about doing less with less. I think USPS is going to have to do more so they can get back just the right amount.
Well, there's a debate that's going on here, too. And I've read a number of different approaches to it that by raising rates, you're going to drive more people away. And I'm not sure that that's such a bad situation for the Postal Service, because normally in a regular business, you would think, yeah, you don't want fewer customers. But if you're eliminating customers in the areas that you're not realizing much profit. I mean, I don't know how you make any money by me being able to mail a letter from here for 44 cents to Hawaii. That doesn't make any sense.
I think it's kind of like an identity crisis now for USPS. I mean, mm-hmm. they're talking about maybe combining post offices with grocery stores or having self-service kiosks. So I think the image we have of post offices could be totally different in the future. And
mm-hmm.
this year, you're starting to see the ideas that could come into fruition when budgets get even tighter for them.
How much do you think that will affect the way that people think about the Postal Service as the place to send whatever stuff it is they need to send?
I think it's going to be like a rebranding effort.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't, you know, nowadays, I can't remember the last time I sent a letter in the mail. So you got to think about, you know, how are people's needs changing and how do you change your mission to meet those needs? So
I think Jolie brings up a great point right there, and because this is one of the few agencies that's set up to run like a company.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm running a company, I'm not going to keep continually doing what I'm doing if I'm losing my company money.
Yeah.
I'm going to change with my customers. I'm going to make sure that I'm able to get as much money as I possibly can out of the services and goods that I provide. And it's not happening. Just because this model worked 25, 30 years ago doesn't mean it's going to work now. 25, 30 years ago, there was no email. There were a lot of other things that weren't here.
Yeah.
And you have to take those into consideration when you're doing what you're doing.
The leadership of the Postal Service, I think, is doing a good job of that. That's what John Potter talked about before he left. Patrick Donahoe doing the same thing now as the leader there. I even get a sense that the unions that represent postal workers, you know, they've extended their deadlines to negotiate with the Postal Service a number of times just because they're trying to help them get a handle on all of this. I can think of 535 people, though, in a particular white building that's about 10 miles from here that don't seem to have that same sense of urgency at changing the business model at the Postal Service. And maybe it's because they're hearing from a portion of their constituency that I would happen to guess is particularly small, that they want things to stay the same. But I wonder at what point Congress will let the Postal Service do what they need to do and say, yes, I know the people that vote for me would like it to stay the way that it is, but since that's not a sustainable model, that's not an acceptable choice, and it has to change. Any thoughts about that?
I think you're exactly right, because if something doesn't change with this, next year we can come back at the end of 2012. This will be our exact same story right here, right now, and we can use the exact same articles, because something needs to change.
It has but it'll be after election, so maybe things will change.
Well, I wonder, though, how much of an if you went out and polled on election issues, how much my local postal service or post office branch would really, because I'll be honest with you, I just a couple of weeks ago, just for fun, I went on the Postal Service website and put in my address. They have a site where you can put in your address, and it shows you where the post offices are that are nearby. And where I live in Gaithersburg, within 10 minutes driving time, there are 7 branches. Now, I don't ever need to mail anything that badly. So, and I understand it's a little weird for me because I live in a highly populated area, but I'll give you another example. My parents in Dover, Pennsylvania, with a population of about 5,000 people, and it's about 15 miles outside of York, Pennsylvania. They can drive within a half hour to 6 branches of the Postal Service.
And just think about that. Those numbers right there, it's too much. There's not that many McDonald's in your vicinity. There's more postal post offices than there are McDonald's, and more people are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a good point. There are, with the same driving distance, I would guess there are 3-4 that I can think of. So you're right.
And McDonald's is serving 1 billion.
Yeah, and the Postal Service isn't serving 1 billion, that's for sure. The whole wrapping your arms around this is going to be difficult. I've noticed a difference in the tone and the focus. I mentioned John Potter a little bit ago, and when we had this conversation a year, 2 years ago, he was talking about selling all kinds of different things and mentioning and testified to Congress, in fact, that postal services in Europe and other countries, you can go there to get service for your cell phone. You can buy that kind of thing. I'm not sure that anybody's at a place anymore where finding new things for the post office to sell is really the idea, is it? Do you think? I mean, that's we're kind of far down the road for that, it seems to me.
No, I don't think that will work here for this reason, because if, let's say, we do bring a cell phone fix and repair shop into the Postal Service.
It wasn't repair, but it was just that you could go there and buy a phone and get your service from them.
Something along that line. You're going to have to bring in people that are knowledgeable about that subject. It's going to cost you more money, mm-hmm. and you're going to be – I know it takes money to make money, but you're going to be putting out a lot more money than you need to be or you should be doing. It's just what you were talking about yesterday. If you want to make a little bit of money and you waste a lot of money, you open a vineyard.
Yeah, you haven't really accomplished much.
That sort of reminds me, it's kind of a stretch, but the government printing office, because they're as, if not more, affected by the changes in digital use. And, you know, what they did, I mean, they're still printing paper copies of the Federal Register and the Congressional Record. But, you know, they've shifted their focus to the security cards, the HSPD. So mm-hmm. that's kind of their future. So I don't know what the answer would be for USPS, but something like that, where they take their skills that they do have and kind of evolve to the next step.
Well, let's take a break here and talk about this a little bit more, because you've both chosen it as your second most important federal news story of the year. My colleagues Justin Udo and Jolie Lee on the Federal News Countdown this week. Second most important federal news story of the year, the situation at the Postal Service. And we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
And now, Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Steph Warren is the principal deputy CIO for the Veterans Affairs Department. He says a major reason the agency fixed its IT projects is because they created cadres of project management experts.
We moved them into pools of folks, still having a leader in the pool, but the leader in the pool is responsible for the training of the employees. So when they get assigned to an increment, they're ready to go. They've got the knowledge, the experience, and the support structure such that they can deliver.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
We look at applications and software development from an architectural view today. At least we should, because quite frankly, it's so much easier to design security in than to find the thousands or tens of thousands of vulnerabilities that might exist in that software at a later date once deployed.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help government secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formula.
The Holiday Gift of Health. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. The holiday season is a very busy time, but there's one gift you can give to yourself and the people you care for that only takes a few minutes, and you can get it while you're shopping. It's a flu vaccination, and you can get it at a lot of places, including malls, drugstores, and supermarkets, as well as doctor's offices. It protects you and helps to keep you from infecting others. Surgeon General Regina Benjamin.
Anyone aged 6 months or older can receive a vaccination, including pregnant women. And there is a new high-dose vaccine for older Americans.
There are some choices: the standard shot, a new version with a shorter needle, and a nasal spray.
When you think about it, your flu vaccination is the nicest holiday gift. It's a gift of health.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the year, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And a programming reminder, we will be back to our standard Federal News Countdown two Fridays from now, with two special guests that I'll tell you about when we come back from the holiday break. And they will choose the three most important federal news stories of the week. That's what we normally do in the 3 o'clock hour every Friday. Today, it's a look back at the entire year of 2011 with my colleagues Justin Udo and Jolie Lee. And we're talking about the second most important story of the year, coincidentally chosen by both of them, the situation with the U.S. Postal Service. And over during the break, we were talking, Jolie, about a point that you made about the email box program that the Postal Service has talked about. Now, this is something going back to, I would say, at least the late 90s or early 2000s that they talked about doing some kind of an email service provision, and it didn't happen, and I don't know why it didn't happen, but talk about what they're talking about, what you're reading about here.
Basically, this would be like a secure place for you to get. It would be kind of melding the paper world and the digital world. Basically, a more secure email is the way I read it. The idea was kind of pitched to Postal Service execs, and they said, okay, this market wasn't like mature enough, whatever that means, but it doesn't look like it's something that's going to happen, just an idea that's floated out there.
And we all kind of had the same reaction independently as we were kicking it around during the break, and that was, this might be a great idea if this was 2001 instead of 2011, but it sounds to me, unfortunately, like a great idea, but the time, it's kind of been overcome by events because,
I mean,
my wife and I just did a refinance not too long ago, and you can imagine every piece of personal information, PII, that is imaginable was included there, and I felt fairly comfortable using the email account that we have as a standard service. A lot of people use it to email these documents to the guy that did the refi for us. He emailed us information back, and I didn't really think twice about any privacy or security elements there. So it sounds to me like that maybe is an idea whose time has kind of come and gone, you think?
I absolutely agree with you 100%. I think that this would have worked. They need to start looking towards the future. We're saying they were stuck in the past with their business model, and their new ideas that they're generating are ideas from the past. So it's time to look beyond that and see what you can cut back on, not necessarily what you can do more of or how you can expand. If something's not working, you're gonna pull it in a little, and that's what they need to focus on.
The Postal Service has a lot of visionary people, a lot of people who are really smart and have a good sense of how to do what you're talking about, Justin, and at the same time develop new ideas and so on. And it's really easy to dump on Congress for the problems that any federal agency or organization has. But this strikes me as really the ball's in Congress's court on this one, because there's legislation out there, there's all kinds of things, but nothing seems to be happening, and it looks, at least from the outside looking in, like it's because of all of the other junk, and we'll get to some of the other junk as the number one story of the year, but we've got the thing up on federalnewsradio.com right now about the whole issue with the payroll tax cut. All of the time, all of the energy that was expended on that didn't need to be, and could have been used toward looking at things like this and the other myriad problems that agencies are dealing with. And it wasn't. It was spent on that contest, the type of which I can't say on the radio.
Well, Francis, I labeled this this story or stories as USPS woes, because it seemed like every week there was just something new, something different coming out about them. What do you see in 2012 for this agency? You're well, better versed on it than both of us.
Well, I see. I think a lot of it will depend on what happens when union agreements, contracts get put in place. My carrier, who knows that I work here and follow these issues, about 6 months ago left me a newsletter from his union, where the editorial from the president of the union was about why it's a bad idea to cut Saturday delivery. Now, I don't think there's anybody who believes at this point in time, I'm not even sure the unions are convinced that Saturday delivery will survive. I had a friend of mine that isn't connected with the federal government or covering the government or anything at all the other day say, why don't they just do 3-day-a-week delivery? So I think what we'll see in 2012 with the Postal Service is, as Jolie said, some pretty radical things that are a complete reorganization and rethinking about what the Postal Service does and what its role is in society. And it's kind of hard to have that conversation at the same time you're talking about what you rightly refer to, Justin, which is when times are this tough, you got to cut that as much as you can, as quick as you can. So they're really in a precarious situation, I think. And to try to predict what an organization in that shape can do is really, really difficult, I think, because they could go any number of different directions, and then once they go one of those directions, there's even more permutations on each of those directions. So it's just really a weird situation, I think, for an organization to be in. All right. Jolie Lees and Justin Udo's second most important federal news story of the year of 2011, the problems at the Postal Service. And you can read the stories that they've chosen linked up at federalnewsradio.com. That means we have the most important federal news story of the year as selected by Jolie and Justin. And we'll talk about those when the federal news countdown continues on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Star of the game from your Washington Capitals, number 83, Jay Beagle.
Hi, this is Jay Beagle of the Washington Capitals.
Here comes Jay Beagle. A chance in the empty net, and he puts it in. Jay Beagle into the empty net with a goaltender pulled. The Capitals lead it 4-1.
And you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the home of the Caps.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
DHS National Cybersecurity Education Strategy Director Peggy Maxson.
The problem with establishing a cybersecurity professional field is the fact that we couldn't even talk DHS to Health and Human Services to the National Security Agency about the duties of system administration, which should be a common duty across the federal government.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week, the three most important federal news stories of the year, as selected by two of my colleagues here at Federal News Radio, Justin Udo, one of the producers of In Depth with Francis Rose, along with Emily Jarvis, who was going to be on the show today and completely bagged us and went to Ohio for Christmas break. And so my colleague Jolie Lee, who is a digital news writer here at Federal News Radio, is also on the countdown this week. And we are at
number one,
the most important federal news story of the year, and confirming both of you are experts indeed in the world of the federal government. You've both chosen stories around budgets, continuing resolutions, and the super committee, and that was my number one for the year. Justin, your number ones include the story about the DOD and how a CR would affect that. Senate killing a short-term continuing resolution from back at the end of September. Jolie, your story is Jack Moore's story from the end of November about the super committee's failure and some of the reactions that we got. I jotted down here, in addition to the continuing resolution stuff, we have the debt limit debate from back in the spring. And we have the ongoing situation with the Federal Aviation Administration. Now, they don't rely entirely on appropriations, and so they require a reauthorization, and that's gone. We've had two of those, I think, in the second half of 2011. This continues to be a mess that just sticks federal agencies right in a situation that's really bad for them to be in.
I think just to piggyback off of all the budget talks, is the fact that federal employees are used as scapegoats in these talks.
Yeah.
And it's been a big frustration, and we've been hearing a lot of that. We get emails, we get calls from federal employees, you know, and they're kind of bystanders in all of this. And with the super committee cuts, you know, we compiled a list of all the letters from lawmakers and the president, who gave their recommendations to the committee. I mean, they didn't end up coming up with a deal, but you could see in some of these recommendations how federal employees were being targeted. You have the president suggesting increasing Fed's FERS contributions, changing TRICARE. You know, also, you know, just overall, like, targeting feds to pay for the deficit.
Mm-hmm. You're reading information there from the one of the trackers that we have on federalnewsradio.com. Which one is that one? Is that the
This is just called the Super Committee Tracker.
Okay.
So you can search that on federalnewsradio.com.
I will say, and I'm biased, I admit, but you and your colleagues on the web team, Jack and Mike and Julia Ziegler, do a terrific job of organizing all of these things that affect federal employees in one way or another. The buyout tracker
confusing.
Is really
There's
good.
A lot of stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you collect it together in a way that is really logical and makes a lot of sense, and then you make it easy to find on the homepage. So, as an internet goofball greenhorn, I appreciate all of that. Justin, you and I have talked off the air a number of times throughout the course of the year about how all these things affect the people that are trying to do their jobs every day. Which of these elements do you think is the most challenging, most difficult? What are you hearing from the people that you talk to inside government and so on?
I think the biggest thing that I see is the sequestration at the Defense Department, mm-hmm. because of the lack of the super committee to be able to find cuts where they needed to find cuts. All of this bickering and this lack of bipartisanship, it's bigger than the people, the 12, however many people were in the room, and they failed to realize that. And when you can't realize that you have a product that needs to be put out, and you have a department that supplies, I want to say it's something almost 1% of Americans with jobs, mm-hmm. that you can't find a way to help that agency get to where it needs to go, something needs to be done. And to me, that's one of the biggest things.
And something I've heard repeatedly is, okay, you know, you're going to cut agency budgets, but what about cutting the mission?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've heard do more with less. That doesn't happen in reality. It's like Justin was saying earlier, you can only do less with less.
Mm-hmm.
But Congress isn't changing what these agencies are responsible for doing.
I have said a number of times that I have been surprised that the administration hasn't been more forceful, been more aggressive about sending their executive leadership to these oversight hearings. And maybe this will happen when the budget requests come out for fiscal 2013 in February, and we start to hear from the various secretaries and leaders of the various agencies. But I've been surprised that nobody's gone to the Hill yet and said, Mr. Chairman, we understand we're going to have X percent less than we've had in the past, and we're going to have Y percent fewer people working at the agency. So tell us which Z percent of our mission that we do now we're no longer going to be responsible to justify to you. And I haven't heard that at all, and I haven't even really heard an inclination that anybody's willing to do that. But I think that's the most logical thing to do, is to say, if we're only going to have this much money and this many people, then what do we no longer have to do? I call it right-sizing the mission.
Well, kind of on those same lines, one of the things I want to say that we've been talking all this kind of doom and gloom stories from the year that nothing has really looked too good for federal employees. One thing I guess they can be happy about, and if this is a precursor on the future, it's a good thing that we're about to hit Christmas and we already have a bill for the whole year going through. There's not going to be any more continuing resolutions. They're not going to have to worry about a shutdown. We only had to do two, three small continuing resolutions so far. I mean, that's three more than
What does it say, though, if that's the good news?
Well, that's a good point.
3 months late.
I mean, once you're used to eating dirt and someone gives you some grass, I mean, grass looks like the greatest thing on earth. And so this is grass for federal employees, and they can rest easy for another year. And like I was saying, if this is a precursor, hopefully the two parties are the guys up on the Hill are able to come together and say, this is bigger than us. We need to solve these things, and these issues are going to get done.
Well, we will see if that's the case in about a month and a half or 2 months when they come back and try to work on this payroll tax cut extension that they just punted on today. Yes, I know it's, I guess it's good that a deal was done, but it's only for 2 months.
Right.
And I hear on some of the business channels all the time, I hear business leaders saying, we can't really plan for economic growth on a 2 month cycle,
right.
Knowing what we're going to be doing 2 months from now. We need to know a year or 2 years or 5 years out. And we've talked about uncertainty in the federal agencies a lot, but uncertainty in the broader economy is not helping anybody there either. Justin Udo and Jolie Lee's number one stories of the year on the Federal News Countdown all have to do with budgets, continuing resolutions, and so on. We'll wrap up our conversation on today's Countdown in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Previously on the Fed's telework panel discussion sponsored by HP and Intel, Nigel Ballard, the director of federal marketing at Intel, discussed.
HP and Intel had spent a lot of time and money doing research into the federal market, trying to work out why it lagged behind the private sector. But the private sector had slowed down its purchase of desktop and increased its purchase of notebook computers because they were embracing mobility. And the federal government wasn't doing that.
Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Fed's Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you missed the Fed's Telework panel discussion on Federal News Radio, you can listen on demand at fedstelework.com on the issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. fedstelework.com.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Hello, this is Peter Bergman. Please join the Salvation Army and Bergman's Cleaning for the 20th annual Share the Warmth Coats for Kids in the Needy Drive. If you have one or more cold weather coats that you can spare, please donate them for this worthy cause by calling Bergman's. Bergman's will refresh and clean and deliver them to the Salvation Army for distribution to the needy of the Washington metro area. Thanks to you, over 490,000 coats have been collected in the past 19 years. Please make this year's a success by calling Bergman's at 703-247-7600. Thank you.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown is a look at the three most important federal news stories of the entire year, as selected this week by my colleagues Jolie Lee and Justin Udo. And you guys have done a terrific job on this, by the way. This is I appreciate you doing this, and it's fun to spend some time with you on the radio. Always have a good time off the radio, but having you on the air with me this afternoon has been a lot of fun. One of the things we were talking about during the break, and I started to scribble down kind of a very basic one during the commercials, was a timeline of some of the budget events that are coming up. And here's what I've got so far, and I'm sure I've forgotten some. Late January, the president will issue his State of the, will give his State of the Union address where he kind of lays out his FY13 budget priorities, and that'll be kind of the formal kickoff of his re-election campaign. He'll no doubt talk about a lot of the things that he'll hit on the campaign trail. Then early February, the formal budget request submissions to Congress from each of the individual agencies. Late February will be the deadline for another payroll tax cut extension. I mentioned the FAA authorization. I think that's thrown in there somewhere, too, in the January, February, March area. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But then February and March, we'll have all of the oversight hearings about the budget. Then we get to April, May, June. We're looking at budget hearings, and also the debt limit issue comes back.
Right.
And then we're probably only going to see Congress in Washington in maybe as late as May, June, July, because it's re-election season for everybody in the House and a third of the Senate, and, of course, this time the President of the United States. So there's a really tight window of opportunity here for things to get done so we're not in this whole situation again in September, October, November of 2012, looking forward to 2013. It's making people wince, isn't it?
What do you guys think is the likelihood that there will be, you know, a full year budget passed by September 30th?
Absolute zero.
Zero, really?
Absolute zero. No possibility at all.
Really?
No, because, and the reason I say that is because there are a lot of people that expect the Senate to change from Democratic control to Republican. So what's the incentive, if you're Mitch McConnell, to go along with budget priorities that Harry Reid sets out when you have a chance to get in September a CR done to get you through, say, the middle or end of November, call everybody here in a lame duck session in December and get your priorities passed for another month, come back in January of 2013 when you have full control and committee, all the committee chairs, and really get what you want, whether it's President Obama reelected or somebody on the Republican side?
I think what it is, if we look at the payroll tax cut, everyone knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. We knew at January 1st it was ending and something had to be done. And we come from an industry in this broadcast industry where we have a term where it's hurry up and wait.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they do the reverse there. It's wait, hurry up and try to get something done.
End.
So, and it's not going, there's going to be, I think, some more of those CRs that we're going to see next year. We're going to see a lot of this stuff. It's going to happen again. It's a cycle.
Yeah.
It's going to be a cycle.
What do you think?
I don't know. I'm hopeful that we don't have to go through all this. I think the ratings for Congress have just been, you know, nosediving.
And but they've been so bad for so long that I don't think they care anymore.
It doesn't even matter anymore.
I don't think that's even on their radar screen. Thank you guys very much for an excellent, excellent job on the Federal News Countdown this week. One of the producers of In Depth with Francis Rose, Justin Udo, Federal News Radio digital news writer Jolie Lee. You can see all of their selections for the most important federal news stories of 2011 on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. No Federal News Countdown next week. We're back with a brand new Federal News Countdown for the first week of January. And hour number two of today's program is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.